Friday evening, I went to see a movie called The Master. It stars Philip Seymour Hoffman and Joaquin Phoenix. I don't know that I'd recommend it. It's a pretty tough film, although there's some great performances. It's about this character played by Philip Seymour Hoffman, who is this charismatic leader of a religious group that has all the signs of being a cult. And this religious leader is so charming. He knows exactly the right words that seem to calm or make people feel good. And he does this all the time, and so people are really drawn to him because they feel good in his presence. It also becomes very clear that there's no consistency. He says one thing another time to one person, another thing to another person. And at one point in the film, his son kind of makes an aside. You realize he's making this all up as he goes, don't you? That's in the trailer, so I'm not giving anything away. And he is, and it's a problem, because he's making it up according to selfishness that he's not even aware of. He's making it up according to a kind of pandering to people that he's not even aware of. And so there's no internal consistency that's really going to help people find a direction for their life. We can't make it up as we go. And yet we realize that religious principles and matters of faith are things that evolve with new understandings of science and new understandings of life and new understandings of and thoughts about what it is to be human. Jesus faces a kind of question today, and they're trying to see if he's just making it up. The Pharisees are trying to catch him. They're trying to snag him. This is a pattern in the Gospel of Mark. They're trying to catch him doing something that they, you know, like a politician trying to find a little YouTube clip that they can put on there to discredit the person. They're trying to catch Jesus. Jesus Christ, light on marriage, you know, those kinds of things. And so when they ask Jesus the question of, so what about divorce? Can a man divorce his wife? Can he give her a writ of divorce? Jesus is very careful because it's a hot issue. It has to do with a core belief of who we are. It has to do something with something extraordinarily personal to every person in the room. It has to do with the culture that they live in and the varying understandings of what marriage is and the culture that they live in. And so Jesus answers this way. He says, this is what's at the heart of it. And there's three things I want to suggest that he says are the key things we should pray about and think about. The first is that what marriage is has to do with the core of who we are, the core of who we were created to be as human beings. That the coming together in a union has to do with being godlike, with being divine. It's a gift from God. The second thing, that when God creates a union, a marriage of faith is a union that's created by God. It feels an awful lot like the people are creating it themselves, but really God is creating it with a specific purpose and some role, some way to give life to the world through it. So it's has to do with the core of who we are in the divine image. Marriage itself is something created by God, and people are called to for a particular purpose for each marriage. And the third thing I would say is this. Jesus recognizes that cultural accommodation needs to be corrected. They had, because the question of the writ of divorce, Moses did allow a divorce, that a man could write a writ of divorce. That was a cultural accommodation. And Jesus says, well, that cultural accommodation isn't one that's authentic to what we really mean by marriage and what's really intended in the scriptures by marriage. And so he calls that practice of allowing divorce into question and says that, no, if it's created by God, if the union is one that's created by God, then it has to be preserved. And we know that there are all kinds of ways that we are touched by all of these things. We know that our Christian understanding of marriage and sacramental understanding of marriage is its own kind of particular thing. I almost wish that we had a different word to use for Christian marriage, because what is meant by a sacramental Christian marriage is different, perhaps, than what another culture means, what it means civilly, what it means to other religions. And we mean something very specific. It's the reason I think that we acknowledge the possibility of annulments. Annulment is where we say that The things that need to be in place for this to be a sacramental Christian marriage weren't in place. This is a marriage. It was a marriage in the eyes of the state. It might have been the marriage in the eyes of another faith. But it didn't have the things from the beginning in it that we understand to be crucial for it to have been a marriage. And so we have a way of acknowledging that through the annulment process. We have to also appreciate the ways that the church is really cautious about making accommodations because we've made some big mistakes. When we've overly accommodated the political, cultural, or social realities of a particular culture and forgotten the core of what it is when we say marriage and marriage through our wisdom and tradition, at times people have really been hurt. Women, for sure, have truly been hurt. The accommodation that Jesus addressed today has feminist implications because in a divorce of Jesus' time, the man got the children and all the property. The woman had nothing. If she could go back to her family of birth, that was great. If not, she was on the streets. So accommodations often have a consequence to people. And so we have to kind of pardon the church if we move a little slowly on accommodating new or embracing new realities. What I will say is this from the rest of the gospel, from the rest of the gospel that Jesus proclaims. Jesus proclaims compassion for those who have suffered. And I've never met a divorced person who has not suffered. And Jesus welcomes the suffering. Jesus welcomes those who've made mistakes into the midst, and we do today. Divorced and separated Catholics are welcome in our midst. Let us help you heal. Let us find a way to discover the grace and the truth and the beauty that can come from that experience and lead to more refined and beautiful and godly union in the future. Secondly, I think we have to approach it with humility, because sometimes people married in other ways besides a Christian sacramental marriage witness to and show us truths about marriage that shine and challenge us to live more fully what we believe about marriage and how we support it. And third is hope. Not every marriage is, well, there is no marriage that from beginning to end is a perfect revelation of the divine inner life of God. There's always struggle, and there's always a sense of trying to build that kind of marriage and foster that kind of union and appreciate the kind of purpose that each marriage has. And so today there are lay theologians and theologians in the magisterium and church that are looking. They're looking at the wisdom of the ages and seeing how the wisdom of the ages fits in our present world with what we've discovered in science and new understandings of the world and the church and culture. We are called to try to support people who are called to marriage. There's a lot of movement right now in trying to look at how we do marriage preparation, how we help people court better. I tell you, one of the special intentions I've prayed for ever since I moved to LA 7.5 years ago is for people who want to get married in a Christian sacramental faith way and have a hard time finding other people to do that with. And third, that we support, welcome, and treasure people and help try to assist people in living a marriage from the spiritual core, from the sense of gift that God created it. We don't make it up as we go, nor can we ignore the evolving understandings and the issues, the critical issues that are so important, because as today, they are completely theological, deeply personal, and with cultural implications. But at the heart, we have to remember a loving compassion, and that God wants to give us loving companionship, that God wants to give us a gift of a confident and committed union, and a way to live with another that gives life to the world. In short, God has given the gift of living in this life a taste of what it is to live in the heart of God.